This podcast is sponsored by Xgrowth. Xgrowth is the APAC ABM agency. If you and your organization are looking to land and expand enterprise mid-market deals, Xgrowth is the agency to help. Xgrowth works with a wide range of international and global technology vendors, service providers, and B2B SaaS companies. If this sounds like some of you're interested to know more about, make sure to check out Xgrowth at xgrowth.com.au. That's xgrowth.com.au and chat with the APAC ABM agency.
What's up, marketers, and welcome to another episode of the Growth Colony Podcast. I'm Liza from Xgrowth to tell you that each episode we bring in B2B leaders to chat about how you can achieve those everyday wins in the marketing world. Whether you're new to the B2B game, working at a leadership level, or even just showing some interest, we know you'll love the episode. So grab a drink, get comfy, and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode. I'm Shaheen Hoda from Xgrowth, and today I'm talking to Steve Watt, Director of Market Insights and Seismic Social Selling Expert from the company Seismic, about how to incorporate social selling in your ABM program and why that is super critical. It's a challenging piece because now you have to bring sales and marketing together, and that alignment piece is going to be even more important. So I'm really excited to dive in. Also, Steve is a long-term friend of mine. I've learned tons of stuff from him, and he delivers. So you want to tune in for this one. Steve, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast again.
No pressure, eh, Shaheen? Setting me up like that. Hey, good to see you, my friend. I always love our conversations, whether they're being streamed or whether they're just you and me. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this. And this is an interesting topic because I feel like there's a lot of fluff out there. There's a lot of, you know, oh, social selling is this, or social selling, there's a lot of definitions around it, and there is a lot of inaccuracies, I feel like, that is around it. So it would be really helpful to hear how you define social selling and how do you go about explaining what social selling is.
I'm trying to redefine it because, as you said, there's a lot of misconceptions. I would say there's a lot of baggage around it. There's been a lot of bad, selfish behavior under the guise of social selling over the years. You know, I mean, like the whole connect and pitch, the people just, you know, pitch slapping anyone who moves, sending 100 connection requests a day, and then hitting anyone who accepts it with an immediate pitch, an immediate ask for a meeting. It doesn't work anymore at all. And it's like people hate it. Like, you know, it's like, it's this hunting mindset and nobody wants to be your next meal, right? No, nobody is on LinkedIn to be hunted. Nobody wants that. So we're putting up walls to keep those people out. And sometimes when people hear social selling, they're like, oh my God, here we go again. This guy is going to tell me how to hunt people. And maybe he's going to tell me how to use AI. So I don't even have to talk to anyone. I can just like let a machine go hunting for me. And that's exactly the opposite of what I believe the opportunity is in the future. To me, social selling, it's not selling on social. It's using social channels and LinkedIn in particular to build your reputation, build your relationships, build trust, get involved in all the right conversations with all the right people such that you rise above the noise. And you're not just another one of those guys out there hammering the phones and hammering the email and hammering the in-mails. You actually, you know, I love to say to salespeople, look, just imagine for any person you want to talk to, anyone that you want to have a meeting with, 100 other salespeople want the same thing. 100 other salespeople are trying to get that person's attention. How do you become the one that he or she actually wants to speak with? You know, to me, that's the goal. And I believe that that is possible through what I'm trying to, you know, redefine as buyer-centric social selling. not making it a selfish play, but actually being interesting and relevant and valuable and educational and inspirational and helpful for your current and future clients such that they actually want to talk to you. That's the opportunity for social selling. And it's a lot different from what a lot of people's mind goes to when you say social selling.
Got it. And really what we're talking about is these valuable insights being shared and distributed on the platform without too much of an ask. Is that right? And then really building that over time. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's exactly right, Shaheen. It's like a whole lot of give and really slow rolling the ask. I mean, it's like really showing up and speaking up and, you know, with an honest intent to give it away, to educate, inspire, help others, share what you're learning, share what you're seeing, share what's changing, answer questions that you often see, and also be there for others and support your customers and people you don't even know. Like, be a good member of the LinkedIn community and you know, treat it more like a community or like a, I love to say it's the greatest ongoing business conversation the world has ever seen. You know, we all know how to participate in conversations offline, right? We don't just talk about ourselves. We don't try to sell everyone we meet in the first 30 seconds of making eye contact with them. Like, we don't do these. We know how to have human conversations and nurture relationships and build our reputations. We know how to do all that stuff offline. And then we get online and we forget all of it. And we just become these like sales robots. And you know, that's what I'm rallying against. So yeah, it's like, as Perry Hedrick, who's great at this stuff, he runs a PR firm in the US called Crackle PR. And he kind of coined the phrase, ungate your mind. You know, ungate your mind. We've been talking for a long time about ungating content. Well, Perry says, I've ungated my mind. And he just puts it out there. Everything he's learning about PR, all the ways PR is changing, all the things that don't work anymore and what works instead. And he becomes an absolute magnet as a result. And he's built this PR firm that, like, he doesn't make sales calls. He doesn't run ads. He doesn't do any of that stuff. People come to him. He has become a magnet for the right people at the right time. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. Now, I do want to touch on the how a little bit. But before I do that, I think it's also important to talk about how is this related to ABM, right? Where does social selling come into the ABM equation for the activities that organizations are running? Where do you see that fitting into the equation? Because I also know, by the way, for those who might not know, Steve is also an ABM expert. And has done courses on ABM, meaning that he taught the courses, and there's a wealth of knowledge there as well. So how do those two, Steve, come together?
I think social selling done right, done in this buyer-centric mindset and approach, is the critical missing element for a lot of ABM. It's like the last mile to get to the right people in a really compelling way. Like, if you think about so many ABM programs or practices or capabilities, right? They do tremendous work around the ICP, around really understanding at the firmographic level what's going on and who their ideal accounts are. And they've got like a clear narrative for each different segment. And they've worked out different clusters and different segments within it. And they know the narrative for each. Maybe they've got like a whole creative approach for each. They've got content for each. They've got all these tools and they got like all this stuff built up, which I'm a huge advocate for, as you well know. But then at the last mile, it's like the sales guy that I'm supposed to talk to, I go to his LinkedIn profile and it doesn't match in any way. Like, you're trying really hard to convince me as a firm that you understand my world and you have deep expertise and deep appreciation for what I'm doing, what my company's doing. But the salespeople that I end up talking to don't look like they have that at all. Like, not at all. I go to their LinkedIn. So I do all that. And then I'm like, okay, you want me to talk to this guy? So I go look at his LinkedIn profile and it's like just his resume. It's his CV. Or worse yet, it's a brag sheet, right? It's like, I got 180% quota attainment and I've been to President's Club 4 years in a row. And I saw one sales guy, he bragged on his LinkedIn profile that he's a master negotiator. Like, oh boy, I can't wait to talk to that guy, right? So you're doing all this great ABM work, but at that critical, where the rubber hits the road, the actual human being that you want me to talk to and who is ultimately going to quarterback this like growing relationship between my firm and yours, I have absolutely no reason to believe that he or she has any credibility in this conversation, because their online presence doesn't in any way line up with all this big marketing motion that you've worked so hard on and spent so much money on. So that's why I say it's the critical missing element. If we can bring those people deeper into the ABM motion and help them really show up in a more coherent way for the buyer. So I'll give you a great example. I've got many sales colleagues at Seismic. We've got a pretty big sales team, and they're not all superstars at social selling, but some of them are getting pretty darn good at it. So one guy, he focuses on specific, very large tech firms. He's doing like giant deals. So at any given time, he only has two or three firms that are his targeted accounts, and he's going to work those accounts for a year. And so he builds his online presence to be interesting and relevant to those firms. So he's sharing a lot of content about them, about their competitors, about their industry, about what's going on. He's getting involved in conversations. He's tracking all of their people. And when their people are posting things, he's getting in there and liking and celebrating and leaving value-added comments. He's always growing his network within these firms so that he might have like 100 or 200 connections at Intel or Google or Microsoft or whatever these huge accounts are. And so people keep seeing his name. They keep seeing him showing up in positive ways. They keep seeing that he's not just talking about Seismic. He's not just flogging his software. He's demonstrating that he has some expertise and some real passion for their world. He looks like a fellow professional and not just a random sales guy coming out of left field. As a result, they see him differently. You know, he's seen, he's heard, he's understood, he's respected in ways that other sellers aren't. And it's tremendously impactful for his ability to penetrate those accounts that thousands of other salespeople are trying to penetrate. But he is succeeding because he's closing that gap, right? That credibility gap that so many salespeople are not closing. So that's where I think that, you know, I fully support all the ABM work that you and I have been talking about for years, 100%. But it's only been in recent years that I've kind of realized that was a gap.
Interesting. How do you address the statement of, well, I'm not an expert, what am I going to talk about? Where I've heard some salespeople say, where, hey, I'm here just selling this product. I know about our product, but I'm not an expert in the space. What am I going to talk about? How do you address that and I'm sure that you get that question often.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that first of all, there's a bit of a mindset problem. If you only kind of know about and care about your product, you got a problem here, right? I mean, salespeople ought to aspire to become trusted advisors to their buyers. They ought to aspire to being able to have real conversations about business outcomes and not just about tech or tools, right? So how can you be even close to a trusted advisor? How can you have any sort of conversation about business outcomes with any credibility if you don't understand their business? You know, if you don't know what's going on in their industry, if you don't know what their competitors are up to, if you don't know where they're strong or weak relative to their competitors, if you don't know how their industry is changing, you're going to have a hard time. Like, let's forget about social selling for a minute. You're going to have a hard time selling. You're just going to have a hard time carrying any credibility into this meeting. You know, these coveted meetings, salespeople always want meetings. well, what are you just going to walk into that meeting and just like show up and throw up? Like, here's my product. I hope you buy it. Like, you've got to be, for a whole lot of reasons, you better be understanding something about your customers and your prospects and their industries. So the good salespeople are doing this anyways, but they're doing it in private. They're learning, they're reading, they're, you know, doing all this stuff, but they're not kind of wearing it on their sleeve. So this isn't so much do something hugely different as it's take what you already doing or really ought to be doing and just do it out loud, do it in public. Right now, fair criticism to what I'm saying is if you do small deals and you have 1,000 accounts and they span industries, you're going to have a really hard time doing any of this stuff. But again, that's not a social selling program, a problem. That's a selling problem that, you know, I'm really focused more on those kind of enterprise and global reps who are out there trying to close those, you know, six figure, seven figure, eight figure deals. And it blows my mind when they're not doing any of this stuff. Because if you actually talk with the good ones anyways, you talk to them and ask them what they know about these industries and these customers, they know a lot. They really, really do know a lot. So this is just getting them to understand the value of bringing that knowledge out into public. And to your question about, you know, do you have to be an expert? I mean, you don't have to be. So some people have a misconception that in order to like speak up on LinkedIn, you need to be like a thought leader. You need to be like the world's expert. You need to have written the book. Yeah, not at all. I mean, good salespeople are super knowledgeable, right? They know what the problems are. They know what the biggest obstacles that their customers run into. They know the biggest objections that they face. They know the misconceptions that buyers have. They get these same questions over and over again in every sales cycle. They know this stuff. Just start getting in the habit of answering some of those questions out loud.
Let's talk about mistakes. We talked about the pitch slap and a few others. What are some of the other mistakes that you see people make when they're trying to, when maybe they're bought in on social selling, right? They're like, oh yeah, we should do social selling. And they're embarking on that journey. What are some of the mistakes that you see in that process?
Yeah, lots. let's start with content. I also want to go to more the connection etiquette, but let's start with content. If you're not sharing content, well, that's a mistake because that's a huge missed opportunity. And I think a lot of people have figured that out. But what do? They only share their company content. They're just like, yay, us. We won an award. We released some results. We're doing a webinar next week. Our CEO was speaking at a conference. It's like being a corporate cheerleader. You know, it's like being a Wi-Fi extender for the company page. Just resharing company content. And if that's all you do, nobody is listening. You know, nobody's on LinkedIn to read your press releases and your case studies. Like, we're just not. I mean, we're there to have conversations with human beings with whom we might learn something from and might advance our own interests. So big mistake A, failure to show up and speak up. Big mistake B or A1 is just showing up in that robotic Wi-Fi extender corporate cheerleader way. The win comes when you share more of like a balanced diet of content. So yeah, share some content from your company. Sure, do that. But also share a considerable amount more content that's not about your company. So if I work for a company and let's say that we sell into the auto industry, you know, I should be sharing content about, you know, regulatory changes, business changes, you know, big, you know, M&A in the auto industry, legislation around emissions, new vehicles being released, market trends, you know, the hottest color in cars this year, like lots and lots of stuff so that these auto industry executives that I'm trying to build rapport with will see me as someone who knows and cares about what they care about. You know, and then I'm going to slip some of my company content in that too. And now instead of like, oh, here comes Steve, the guy who talks about himself, here comes Steve, the guy who talks about his company, and ignore, right? Now it's like, oh, here comes Steve, the guy who's always got something interesting to share and something interesting to say about my industry. And oh, this time he's actually talking about his company. Oh, I wonder what they do, right? Now we've created a bit of trust, we've created a bit of curiosity, and now he will actually read that content of my corporate content or maybe come to my webinar or whatever. So like we're still like it's people always want to take what I say to like some ridiculous extreme. It's like straw man it. Or like Steve says, you should never talk about your company. No, I don't. I say that you shouldn't just talk about your company. You know, so that's one big mistake. Another thing is around just the whole connection requests. I mean, people always want to lead with a connection request. I say instead you should lead to a connection request. And what I mean by that is 95% of salespeople, if you gave them a new account or a new territory or something, they'd start, if they are at all social minded, they'll start pounding out connection requests to everyone that they wish that they could talk to. And even if they're honestly not trying to pitch slap them, like they're, oh, no, I just want to connect. You know, the other person just assumes that there's a pitch incoming. If they accept that, they see sales in your title. They don't know you. You've built no rapport and no trust and no reputation with them at all. You're just a random salesperson hitting them with a connection request. They're almost certainly going to ignore it. So instead of leading with the connection request, lead to it. You know, follow them, follow their company, follow other people in their company. Of course, not everybody posts on LinkedIn, far from it. But in any company that you want to penetrate, they've got some people who do. Follow those people, start seeing their posts, start engaging with them, start doing what I said my colleague does with these large tech companies such that they're seeing you out there in positive ways. And now you're engaging with their posts. I see. And even if they don't post, they're seeing you engaging with their colleagues. They're seeing you engaging with their corporate content. And you're not just cheerleading them. You actually have something to say. You've got something to add to the conversation. They start to notice you a little bit. You start to rise above the crowd a little bit. In some cases, they come to you and they send you a connection request. But often they don't, but what you've done is you've slowed your roll, and now you can, in time, you know, you might start sending them, you know, a couple of notes again without an ask. You made the point earlier, Shaheen. It's less, you know, fewer asks, more gives, right? So now you've been following this person for a while, you've been engaging with them. Maybe you send them an email or you know, a message with like a piece of content or an invitation to a webinar that your company's doing or something. You're not just trying to get that meeting. You're not just trying to get that meeting. And you stand out by the very fact that you're not doing what everybody else is doing, which is just transactionally hunting and trying to get that immediate connection request, that immediate meeting. And you build a little bit of trust along the way. And then the connection request can come in time. You can say, you know, after a while, you know, Shaheen, I've been really enjoying engaging with a bunch of your colleagues, and I'm really interested in the sorts of stuff that you're doing. You know, would you be open to connecting? And now your acceptance rate probably just hit like 70% instead of 2% if you're just pounding them out cold. So content mistakes, connection mistakes, there's more, but you know, unless you want to do a 3-hour podcast, maybe we'll stop there.
No, those are really good. Those are great points that you've raised. And the other question that I wanted to ask you is, because a lot of our audience are marketers here, which, by the way, I think marketers should also think about this and incorporate it in what they do. But what is your advice to marketers in order to enable sales to do this? Because we know sales don't always listen to marketers. In fact, it's probably the opposite. It's most of the times they don't listen to marketers, and some of the stuff that are coming from marketing team might be ignored. How would the marketers approach this? Because their marketers are running for example, the ABM program, right? And they want to get results. They want to see pipeline. They want to see meetings. They want to see opportunities created, so on and so forth, and ultimately revenue. What is your advice for marketers to close that, you call it the final, the last mile. How do you, what is your advice for them to close that gap, and what can they do?
They can lead by example. I mean, marketers are generally speaking really bad at marketing themselves. They're bad at anything that isn't part of their marketing machine. I know I'm being unfair to some, but I think it's I stand by that statement as a general statement. A tremendously high portion of marketers do not participate in this great ongoing business conversation of LinkedIn, and they are missing so much as a result. I mean, I'm a marketer by education. I'm a marketer by profession. You know, I've now kind of flexed more into a much more of a sales-centric role, but I mean, at heart, I'm a marketer. And I'll tell you, I have learned so much about marketing by being active on LinkedIn. It has changed and broadened and enriched my perspective on marketing in so many ways by getting out there, you know, reading what other people are posting, engaging in conversations, having my ideas challenged and sometimes defending them, and other times recognizing that maybe I'm off base and I'm learning, meeting amazing people, getting invited on podcasts, you know, getting invited to speak at conferences. It's done a world for my skill as a marketer, for my perspective as a marketer, my reputation as a marketer. But beyond all of that, it means now when I talk to my sales team about social, I got a ton of credibility. No one will ever accuse me of like, oh yeah, Steve, you know, do what I say, not what I do, you know. And that's where a lot of marketers are, and a lot of sales enablement people too. They're like, hey, you should do this. And it's like, well, what about you? Oh, no, not me. No, wait, you should totally do this, you know? So like, lead by example. You will learn so much. It'll be so good for your career and your reputation. You'll carry so much more credibility into that conversation with those salespeople and those sales leaders. You'll also be able to, like, with real credibility, answer their questions and help them overcome their concerns. I mean, people, as they're new to social selling, they have a million questions about how does this work and how does that work and should I do this and what about that? And if you're not doing it yourself, how are you going to answer those questions? You're just like, you're going to give them like, send them a blog about social selling. Like, you will carry so much more credibility into every aspect of this if you lead by example. So that's my biggest recommendation for marketers.
Got it. And obviously your advice is going to become a lot more practical. Absolutely. So I'm a marketer. I'm listening to this and I'm like, okay, Steve, I'm sold. I need to do this. What would you say to a marketer in terms of where they should start?
Yeah. I mean, the easiest thing of all is rewrite your LinkedIn profile so it's not just your boring resume, your boring CV. Like, just think of it as a client-facing, buyer-facing asset, market-facing, audience-facing, whatever you want to call it. But stop seeing it as just a list of everywhere you used to work and all these skills that you've like put in there to catch the applicant tracking software to get your next job. You know, instead of just thinking of your LinkedIn profile as what's going to get your next job, think about how it can make you better at your job today, right? So rewrite it through the lens of what would I say to my customers? What would I say to my prospects? And be a human being, you know, get rid of that third person CV voice, you know, Shaheen is, no, we know you wrote your own profile. So say, I do this, my firm and I, you know, this is who we serve. This is what we do. This is the kind of outcomes we drive for our clients. And I'm really proud to be a part of that. And here's my part of it. You know, it's like, wow, I get it now. Like, he's a real authentic human being, and he's doing a job within a firm that actually is interesting and relevant to me. So fix your profile would be number one. And second thing is, like, start sharing some of your company's content, but like, bring some human voice into it. The number of people who, if they ever share anything, it's just like boilerplate, you know,
repost.
Yeah. You know, so I was on a sales call, big, I lead a lot of sales calls for our Seismic Social tools. And I'm always like checking out the companies that, and the people that I'm selling to, as one does. And large firm last week, went in and I saw more than 500 of their people had shared precisely the same post, same image, same boilerplate And the only reason I say at least 500 is I couldn't see any more than that on LinkedIn. As I'm searching for it, I got 50 pages of results, 10 to a page. So 500, and then it stopped. So it might have been 1,000 of their people. I don't know. And not one of them modified it. Not one of them did anything. And you know what? Virtually none of them got any engagement at all. It was a pure robotic motion, a pure Wi-Fi extender scenario. And it was so disingenuous. So marketers, yes, share some of your company's content, but please use your words, just say something about it. So at Seismic, we have a big customer event every year. And of course we all talk about it, right? But we don't talk about it like robots. We might all share the same piece of content that's going to promote this big annual conference. But we'll, one person will say, I'm new at Seismic and this is my first year going to Shift, which is the name of the conference. I can't wait because I've heard such good things about it. Check it out. Someone else will say, I've been here 7 years and every year it gets bigger and better. And oh my God, last year I saw Magic Johnson spoke and I can't wait to see who it's going to be this year. So we're all promoting the same thing, but we're doing it like human beings and not like robots. So fix your profile, get out there with your company content would be the next thing. Start layering in some third-party content. I mean, you need to be reading, right? Like if you're not always learning, I don't know how you're thriving. It sort of comes back to where I said, it's not a social selling problem. It's a selling problem a little while ago. Well, I'd say here as a marketer, are you not reading things and watching videos and listening to podcasts? Like you really need to. So now all you're doing is saying, okay, out of all the things that I've read and learned in the last few days, what's the one I'm going to share? What's the one podcast I'm going to post about? The one video I'm going to post about? The one book, the one article that I'm going to, and I'm going to share it and say, hey, for any other marketers that are trying to figure out, attribution within influencer marketing or whatever it is, like I found this really helpful. Right? It's just a new add-on to what you were already doing. It's the same story as with the salespeople. And if you're not constantly educating yourself, well, then you have bigger problems beyond social.
Love it. Love it. All right. Steve, let's do some rapid fire questions. What do you say?
Uh-oh. Pressure. Well, let's long answers are a lot easier than short ones.
That's true. But this was great. Actually, before we do that, is there anything else about social selling that you think we should touch on that maybe I didn't ask?
Let me just tie a bow around all this. I've been talking a lot about it. I think we make a mistake when we think that social is just a marketing function. I think that's the heart of it. You say the word social and someone says, "Oh, go talk to marketing." Like we've got this old-fashioned mindset that social is one little part of what the marketing team does and not even a particularly important part, at least based on how many firms have like the most junior person, like, oh, get that person to run the social. It's been relegated to marketing and relegated to a pretty small part of marketing. I say that's a big mistake. I say that social is way too important to just entrust to your marketing team. Like marketers are absolutely key contributors here, but social is also, it's a sales function, as I think I've made clear. It's a customer success function. Like think of the value of your customer success team being constantly seen and heard and understood and recognized as experts in their space. That's pretty good, right? Social is a talent acquisition function, and not just blasting out, job postings, but actually showing us this great culture that you have, like really building your employer brand such that you become a magnet for the best hires in the world. Social is an executive function, right? It's an opportunity for executives to build real thought leadership. So I think it's a huge mistake when we think social is just a marketing function. I think social is a critical, or should be, a critical strategic function across the firm. And when we reframe it that way in our own minds, then we start seeing a whole world of of untapped opportunities because very, very few companies have sort of sorted this out yet. So yes, it ties to ABM. Absolutely. Ties to a whole lot of other things too.
Love it.
Hey, it's me again. Just here to let you know that I'll be hosting XGrowth's upcoming webinar about increasing your share of wallet with ABM and customer marketing. You'll hear from Stephanie Deschamps, Head of Marketing, APJ, at Boomi, Suzanne Pelizzari, Director of Global Account-Based Marketing at CSG, and of course, Shaheen Hoda, Director of Growth at XGrowth. So catch us live at 12:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Friday, the 16th of June. Save your spot and register with the link in the podcast description. I'll see you there.
All right, let's do rapid-fire questions.
All right,
first question brilliant. I want to ask you is, what is one resource, book, blog, podcast, talk, whatever it is you've come across? And I want to change this to recently you've come across, because you've been on the podcast before, but that has had a profound impact on the way you work or live.
I consume a lot of content. I read a lot of books. In recent years, I've been big audiobook junkie. I also, on airplanes, I read old-fashioned books. The one that my mind goes to, it's, I don't know what you're defining as recent, because I think I first read this maybe 4 years ago. So, hey, in the span of my career, that's pretty recent. Play Bigger, Christopher Lockhead, couple co-authors, category design, you know, really shaping the market, really building a powerful vision of like how you're transforming your clients' worlds, you know, sort of like from to, you know, from this to that, and painting a really vivid picture of the promised land for these firms and how different this approach is from just harping on about your products or your service or your brand all the time, like really addressing it at the category level first, on the road to becoming, as they call it, the category king or the category queen, and capturing the vast majority of the value in that category. It's one of the few books I've gone back to, reread in its entirety a second time. And then I always end up in conversations with other people about it, which then causes me to pull it out again and reread parts of it. So I think I'm going to go with Play Bigger.
Love it. Love it. If you could give one advice to B2B marketers and salespeople, what would it be?
I don't think this is going to be a shock for anyone who's been listening up until this point. Get out there on LinkedIn. Like, read, learn, connect, show up, speak up, engage with others, build your reputation, build your relationships. It's enjoyable. You'll learn a ton. It's really, really good for your career. You'll probably never need to apply for a job again because you'll become a magnet for great opportunities. Yeah, get out there, man.
Tell me about influencers. You've mentioned one or two on the podcast, but who are some of the influencers in this space you follow closely?
Yeah. So I mentioned Perry Hedrick Crackle at the beginning. He's awesome. Well, I just mentioned Christopher Lockhead. Not only is a great author, he's also a great podcaster, and he's really good on LinkedIn. So I've got a tip of the hat to him. Samantha McKenna, Sam Sales. She is hands down the best sales influencer or whatever, in my opinion. I mean, there's many of them out there, and no disrespect intended to many others who are really good, but I think Sam is particularly good. And she's not just about social selling. I mean, she's about sales leadership. She's about prospecting. She's about deal management. She's about getting referrals. She's about so much stuff, and she does it with such humanity, and it's really, really refreshing. I would definitely urge anyone to follow and learn from her. Jason Lemkin, Saster, right? Multiple time VC, leader of the big Saster community. You know, he posts almost like, I don't know, almost every day on LinkedIn, and just great insights from the perspective where most of us don't get. Like, he's posting from the perspective of the board, of the VCs. Like, he sees things from a different vantage point than most of us. And I've learned a ton from him. So definitely give him a shout out as well. And one more, Sangram Vajray. He was co-founder of Terminus in ABM, which you know well, the whole flip my funnel community, and now he's a co-leader of GTM Partners. He's really kind of expanded his perspective a little beyond ABM to be more go-to-market more broadly. And Sangram is a master of community building. And actually, I'm going to see him in, I had a call with him a couple days ago, and I'm going to see him in person in 3 days from now for the first time in a couple of years. So I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah, all of these people, follow them on LinkedIn and learn.
Love it. Last thing is, what is something that excites you about B2B today?
I think we're finally, I hope, finally throwing off a lot of the shackles of robotic, dull, automated B2B sales and marketing. Finally. Like, here's what I think happened to us collectively is back in 2011 or 2012 or whatever it was, the book Predictable Revenue came out and everybody read it. And everybody did exactly that. And they built these like high velocity outbound teams, huge teams of BDRs and SDRs. Marketing got dumbed down to just like lead capture to feed these teams. So marketing started cranking out white papers and all sorts of things and gating everything. And nobody cared if the content was any good because we didn't even care if anybody read it. All we needed to do, we needed to capture a lead, capture an MQL, hand it off to the SDR team to qualify, hand it off to the AE, and this motion that, like, yeah, there's some validity to that motion, but problem is when everybody does it, it breaks down. And buyers just like, nope, not doing it anymore. They stop answering their phones. They stop filling out forms. And I think we got handcuffed by that. And 5 years ago, people who questioned that were kind of shunned. It's like, oh, you're not a modern marketer if you don't do this and understand this stuff. And I'm glad now I think we're emerging from that shadow. We're becoming a lot more human. We're ungating content. We're focused more on community. We're focused more on social. We're trying to be more human and less robotic. And we're thinking differently about marketing, and we're measuring marketing differently. And, you know, people like Chris Walker. Oh, there's another one I didn't mention. Chris Walker from Refine Labs. I mean, he is awesome. I think he's teaching a generation of marketers how to think bigger and think better and actually create demand instead of just capturing email addresses. You know, so I think that, and you know, Chris often says in his posts how, you know, 5 years ago, people were laughing him out of the boardroom. You know, now he's got this thriving company and people are paying him a lot of money to rebuild their marketing functions. So I'm excited about B2B because I think we're coming out of a dark time and we're actually on the road to a much better time.
Steve, as always, this has been an awesome conversation. And a lot of golden nuggets. I'm sure a lot of people are going to take a lot out of this. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast again.
It's my pleasure, Shaheen. You know that I always enjoy a conversation with you, and I hope that your audience enjoyed this one as well.
Today's episode of Growth Colony was produced by Alexander Hipwell and Liza Maywald. It was edited by Dave Semedo with additional editing by Liza Maywald, and music arrangement by Alexander and Liza. Special thanks to Tina Wabe. We couldn't make the show without you. Growth Colony is hosted by Shaheen Hoda, Director of Growth at Xgrowth. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and give us a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Do you think you'd be a great guest or just keen for a chat? Send through an email at podcast@xgrowth.com.au. That's podcast@xgrowth.com.au. That's all for now. We'll catch you next week right here on Growth Colony.